The Bible reading is from Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 to 15. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. So Moses said to God, Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, What is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, Say to the Israelites, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation.
Well, as many of you know, my family has just moved back to Lismore from Hobart. Now, perhaps the biggest dilemma for me in moving back is how to introduce myself now that I'm, particularly to people that I haven't met. So, my first name's James, my last name's Richie, and before I moved away 7 years ago, I was known by everyone as Richie. You know, 7 years ago, if you said, James said this, James said that, people wouldn't know, who on earth, James, who on earth are you talking about? Even my wife, Jasmine, when we got married, she had only ever known or spoken of me as Richie. In fact, the name Richie was so sort of entrenched that often when older people wanted to be polite, call me by my proper name, they would call me Richard, assuming that was my real name. That happened quite a lot. Although there was, in fact, one lady who used to call me Ricardo. I'm not sure how she got that from Richie. Anyway, Ricardo it was. But after I left Lismore, and particularly when I lived in Hobart, everyone knew me as James. You know, James here, James there, James this, James that. I sometimes even got called Pastor James or Reverend James. It was all James, James, James. And now I've arrived back, it's actually hard to know how to introduce myself. Because however I choose to introduce myself, it says a fair bit about me. If I go with Richie, you know, that's like a nickname. So I'll come across as a bit of a, a character laid back. I don't know, the sort of guy who introduces himself to you with his last name. But if I go with James, well, that's my proper name, then I'll come across as much more polite, formal, respectable than if I went with Richie. Now, it's a difficult choice, knowing how to introduce myself. Names matter, introductions matter. And here in this part of the Bible, we meet someone who introduces himself to us. And this time, thankfully, it's someone who's not at all unsure how to introduce himself. It's someone who knows exactly what he wants to be called, exactly what he wants to communicate. Well, who is it? In these verses, it's God who introduces himself to us. Imagine you're in a circle and you're going around and everyone was introducing themselves, you know, one by one. They share their name, a bit about themselves, you know, their family, what they get up to on the weekends, that sort of thing. And you get to the next person in the line and it's God. Like, how would God introduce himself? What would he say? What would an introduction to him be like? Well, that's what we find out here. The situation is that God's people, the Israelites, are in a terrible mess. They're in slavery in Egypt. Pharaoh, the Egyptian king, is oppressing them, working them into the ground, even putting to death their children. And the people are crying out, they're groaning out to God for help. And one of those people, Moses, he's risen up against the regime. He's murdered an Egyptian, beating a Hebrew slave, and now he's living out in the wilderness as a fugitive up there herding sheep. And out of the blue, God approaches him there, introduces himself to Moses, tells Moses of his plan to save his people. See, God's not a God who stays hidden, who can't be found. He's a God who reveals himself, who makes himself known. And here God introduces himself and he shares three things about himself. There's three things that Moses needed to know, that his people in Egypt need to know, and there are three things that we need to know if we're to find our place in the world. What are these three things? They are that God is fearsome, God knows, and God is who he is. God is fearsome, God knows, and God is who he is. But we'll look at them one at a time, starting with God is fearsome. So from verse 1 we see Moses is out looking for some sheep. Looking after some sheep. So he takes them up on the mountain. It's called Horeb here. You might know it as Mount Sinai as well, same mountain. And he's up there, and lo and behold, he looks and he sees a bush on fire, and it's not being burnt up. And it's the most peculiar thing he's ever seen. So he goes over for a closer look. And you can picture it. I can picture it. He's confused. And at the same time, he's awestruck. His hairs are sort of standing up on end. He's never seen anything quite like this. And tentatively, he steps closer and closer forward. He's drawn towards this burning bush. And then suddenly, there's a voice. A voice coming from within the bush of all things. And it calls him by name, Moses, Moses. And the voice says, don't come any closer and take your shoes off. You're standing on holy ground. Imagine that if you're in Moses' position, in Moses' shoes, you could say, imagine the shock and awe that he's feeling at this point. But that's nothing yet, because then next he discovers who it is who's speaking to him. It's God, the God of his fathers, the God of the promise. See verse 6. Then the voice said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And at this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. I don't know how Moses hides his face. Does he put his hands up over it? Does he grab his shirt, his cloak, and cover it over his face? Maybe he puts his face right on the ground, like the sense of he's hiding, but he's still in full view. However it happens, meeting God is having a profound effect on him. God has begun to introduce himself to Moses. And what do we discover about God from this first scene? Well, we discover that he's fearsome. Sometimes we think of God like a buddy. He's safe. He's cuddly. He's really a lot like us. Sometimes we might think of God even as sort of ordinary. Perhaps he's just up there doing his thing. But the God that Moses meets here is the furthest thing possible from ordinary. He's really not like us. There's something other and different about him. This is creature meeting creator. This is human meeting divine. This is the fearsome God who ought to be feared. And it's important when we say that God, to understand, when we say that God is fearsome, we're not simply saying that God is scary and dangerous, nor are we simply saying that God is impressive and should be respected. Fearing God, there's a sort of strange sort of juxtaposition about it. So Moses is both drawn towards God. He wants to come closer and closer and closer, yet at the same time he's terribly afraid and he's hiding his face from God, and both these things are going on at the same time. It's like when Jesus, the very image and Son of God, walked amongst us, people flocked to him. You know, children longed to be with him. Our parents even brought their babies for him to hold. There was a joy and fulfillment found in his presence. Yet, this very same Jesus, at times, he shocked and terrified people. When Jesus calmed the storm, his disciples were filled with fear. When Jesus was transfigured on the mountaintop, his clothes turned to a bright, dazzling white, and his disciples couldn't string their words together. We read they were too frightened to speak. See, God has a beautiful fearsomeness about him. When we truly meet him, we're drawn to him. We can't get enough of him. Yet at the same time, we're awestruck, we're almost shocked, we're utterly humbled by him. Now, this is not me old mate down at the pub, me old mate down at the shops. This is God. Astronauts, when they go into space, they say that the most mind-blowing, mesmerizing thing, it's not seeing the moon or the empty blackness of space. It's actually looking back and seeing Earth. So Neil Armstrong, he said this of the wonderful experience of looking down at Earth. He said, "It suddenly struck me that that tiny pea, pretty and blue, was the Earth. I put my thumb up and shut one eye, and my thumb blotted out the planet Earth. Yet I didn't feel like a giant. I felt very, very small." See, when you see Earth from space, you feel so small and fragile. But there's also something that feels exhilarating about it. There's a sense of rightness of knowing your place. And that's Moses' experience here. He's met God, and he's seen that God is fearsome, and he's been drawn close to tremble before him. What about you? Have you met this fearsome God? Have you trembled yet rejoiced before him? Exodus, this book, is written that you might know God, that you might know him better, that you might know him as he is. Come and meet him. Come and meet him afresh in this book. So we've seen that God is fearsome. Next, we'll see that God knows. See what God says next. See verse 7. The Lord said, "I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I know their suffering." Now, some translations put it as, "I'm concerned about their suffering." It's literally, "I know their suffering." And for the Israelites, they've been suffering. They've experienced slavery. They've been treated harshly. Think of Moses' mum. Think of the choices she had to make back in chapter 2. She's got this new baby boy. There's an edict from Pharaoh to throw all the Israelite baby boys into the river. So she keeps her child hidden for 3 months, as long as she possibly can. And then carefully, painfully, she makes a basket for him and pushes her boy away into the river, her heart sinking as she lets him go. What must she have thought of God in those times? Surely she would have wondered, was he there? What was he doing? Where was he? Maybe she felt that he didn't care, that he'd given up on his promises. And sometimes in our misery and in our suffering, God feels so far away. He seems absent, distant, uncaring. And I'm sure in slavery in Egypt, God's people would have felt that, at least wondered about that. But here God says to Moses, I've seen their misery, I've heard them crying out, and I know their suffering. And it's a knowing that bubbles over into action. A lot of the time we know about other people's problems, but we don't do anything. But here God knows and he acts. He says, I've come down to rescue them, bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land. He says, now go, I am sending you, Moses, to bring my people up out of Egypt. So God is not an absent, distant God. He knows. God knows you. He knows your unique struggles. He knows your pain. He knows when you can't sleep at night. He knows when you can't handle life. God knows you. And he knows us. He knows what his people today are experiencing. He knows the difficulties that come with being a Christian. He knows the choices we've had to make. He knows our war and struggle against sin. God knows it all. And like how he had a plan to rescue his people from Egypt, he has another plan, a much bigger plan, to rescue all his people. It's a plan to end all misery, all crying out, all suffering. It's a plan ultimately to end all the human rebellion and human selfishness that stands behind the misery we experience. You know, it's that big plan centered on Jesus, the promise that he'll return and wipe every tear from your eyes. God knows us. He knows our situation, our suffering, and in Jesus, he's got a big rescue plan. So far we've seen that God is fearsome. We've seen that God knows. Now finally, we'll see that God is who he is. Now back in the day, I used to have a little white Ford Laser. It had a name. The name was there before me, and it got passed to me when I got the car. The name was Abraham. Now, Abraham was a fabulous car. It never broke down. I've got special memories of this car too. I taught Jasmine to drive in the car. It was during those driving lessons that our romance blossomed. You know, we went from being friends to boyfriend and girlfriend to engaged to newlyweds. And that car was with us for the whole journey. It was a brilliant car. Anyway, the car's getting old and I decide to give it away to a friend. And I hand over the keys to this little treasure. And immediately, all sorts of modifications are made. And I'm not talking about good modifications. There's an attempt to paint it black, but it sort of ends up a dreary grey sort of colour. There's an attempt to put a big exhaust on the back, but remember this is a little Ford Laser. It's got a small engine. It sounds terrible. The steering wheel is replaced with sort of like a racing wheel. It's just not right. You know, here's my beautiful, precious car, and it's been modified, changed, completely ruined. And we see in this next section that unlike my car, God cannot be modified. He can't be changed. He can't be ruined. He is who he is. So what happens is Moses has heard God's plan to save his people, but he's unsure of it. He's firstly unsure of his own part. So he begins by asking, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? But then God answers by saying, I'll be with you. And we see from Moses' next question, he's not just unsure of his own part, more fundamentally, he's unsure of God and God's part in the plan. Can he really trust God? So he asks God, "What is your name? Who are you?" In verse 14, God says to Moses, "I am who I am." This is what you are to say to the Israelites. "I am has sent me to you." And he goes on and he says, "Say to the Israelites, I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. I am who I am." Now, this passage is all about God introducing himself to us. And here now, we're at the heart of the introduction. You know, what could be more essential in an introduction than the person's name? And it's a sort of name that's classic God. Like, you can get the meaning across in a few minutes, yet you can also spend a lifetime meditating on it. And part of the reason for that is its depth. Part of the reason for the name's depth is that the name itself has a timeless quality to it. So in English, we've got it translated as, in the present tense, "I am who I am." But in Hebrew, the verb is not in past tense, present tense, or future tense. It's timeless. So it could be translated, "I was who I was," or "I will be who I will be," or even "I will be who I was." Now, the point is that God is all of them. See, this is the God of astonishing consistency. He's unchanging. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever, past, present, future. He's the God of the past. He was there back in the time of the Exodus, just the same God as he is now. He'll be there in the future, the eternal King of all kings. We change. We're modified all the time. You have a child, and you never really know how they'll grow and change. You marry a person, you never really know how they'll turn out. Or events happen in our lives and they change us. But God is not like that. Time doesn't change him. Events don't change him. People can't even do things to him to make him different to how he was before. He will be who he is. And what all that means is he is extraordinarily trustworthy. When he makes a promise, he'll keep it. And at times that can be hard for us to see. At times I'm sure it was hard for the Egyptians to see. So the Israelites to see. The Israelites were in Egypt 430 years, many of those in slavery. And God had made a promise that he'd bring them into his promised land, but he hadn't done it yet. And it would have been hard to understand for them. But God is the God who will be who he was. He's the God who is who he is. He'll always come through on his promises. And he'll do it in his good time and in his good way, but do it he will. And that's exactly what he did. Spoiler alert, he powerfully saved his people from Egypt. He kept his promises. Of course, we can't truly trust our cars. They will break down eventually. We can't truly trust our jobs. There's nothing guaranteed. We can't truly trust other people. Sometimes they'll change their mind, won't keep their word. Sometimes they just won't be capable of delivering, even though they want to. They'll have too much going on in their own lives. But God, we can entrust ourselves to him. Because he is who he is. He doesn't change. Often I hear people saying that the God of the Old Testament is different to the God of the New Testament. People say, "I like the God of love in the New Testament, but not the God of anger in the Old Testament." And they're saying that the description of God has changed from the old to the new. And to be honest, I think that's a complete load of rubbish. You want to see the God of love, look here in Exodus and see God's deep compassion for his people. Look at the hundreds and hundreds of Old Testament chapters where God acts graciously and mercifully and compassionately. Or you want to see the God of justice and righteous, appropriate anger, then look at Jesus. Look at his rebuke of the proud, hypocritical leaders. Look at him clearing the temple with a whip. Look ultimately at the cross where all God's right anger against our sin was poured out upon Jesus. So when you find Jesus, you will find the God of the Old Testament. The God of the Old Testament, the new and the old, they're one and the same. And as Jesus said in John 8, and he's thinking of this passage here in Exodus 3, when he says it, it's when the Jews are about to pick up stones to kill him, and he says, "Before Abraham was, I am." See, if it were any other way, this would not be a God we can trust. But no, he's consistent, reliable, he is who he is. And this is the God we've been introduced to in Exodus today. Now, sometimes to me, I'll have someone say to me, they know my name, James, Richie, they say, so what should I call you, James or Richie? And to that, I have a standard response. It's a bit of a silly one. I say, choose your own destiny. But when it comes to God, we don't get to define him for ourselves, and we don't get to choose our own destiny. We've seen that he reveals himself. He's the good God who's beautifully fearsome, who knows us and who is who he is. And if he's those amazing things, then why would you want to change him? No, instead, with this introduction, God is inviting us to know him. This is the main business that we're here for, to know God. And once we get that, everything else will fall into place behind it. And if you're someone who does know him, cherish that. Keep seeking him. Don't let an introduction ever be enough to this fearsome, knowing, and faithful God. Let's pray. Father, you are the God who reveals yourself. Thank you that you do that. Thank you that we might know you. And what a privilege and pleasure it is to have a relationship with you as God, to stand in awe of you, to want to be as close as we can to you, know that you are compassionate, that you understand us, that you care, and to know that you are faithful and consistent, and we can depend on you to keep all your promises. Help us to live looking forward to the fulfillment of your promises. Live even now enjoying the relationship that we have with you that will go on into eternity and expand out more and more. And we thank you for all this in Jesus' name. Amen.